Did you know that erectile dysfunction can occur across all ages? And more importantly, ED in a guy at 20 is actually different than in a guy at 50. Welcome to the GW Medical Faculty Associates Podcast. I'm Dr. Mike Smith, and today's topic, erectile dysfunction across all ages. My guest is Dr. Kelly Childs. Dr. Childs is an assistant professor of urology at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Dr. Childs, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, across all ages, huh? I think most people, right? I think most of my listening audience, unless they've experienced it, think of ED, erectile dysfunction, as an older man's disease. So, is that not correct?
You're absolutely right that that's the perception, but that's not the reality. You know, my waiting room has, you know, guys as young as their teen years, all the way up to my oldest patient is in his 90s. We're managing his ED. So you can imagine there's quite a few guys from all walks of life that we see.
Yeah, yeah. So how about this? Give us a basic definition of erectile dysfunction, but then I would like to look and discuss how that manifests and how it's different in these different age group. So give us just a nice rundown of ED.
Absolutely. So erectile dysfunction is only one of many kinds of sexual dysfunction. You know, sexual dysfunction is if something's not going well in the bedroom. Now, ED itself, the strict definition is when you're not able to get and maintain an erection for sexual satisfaction. And it's pretty important that we remember that, because what people tend to forget is that you need three very, very important things to happen for good erections throughout a guy's lifetime. The first thing is you have to be able to get hard enough. And that kind of makes sense, right? Got to get hard. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. What makes a guy able to have a good erection is if he's able to basically fill the penis with blood. And the thing that does the job for a healthy guy is he's got to have good, healthy arteries. You know, the reason I want to go into a little bit of detail about this is because once you figure out what it takes to have a good erection, it becomes real obvious what can go wrong and why things go wrong at different stages in a guy's
sure.
life. So the first thing is you have to have good arteries. That's how you get hard. Well, that's not just enough. Now you have to stay hard. It is one of the most common things I hear from guys. They come in and they say, well, listen, doc, I can get hard. I'm hard as a rock, but I can't keep it. After a minute or two, it's totally gone. And nothing else has changed. I'm still really into it, but the erection goes away. And what you need to be able to maintain an erection is healthy veins. You know, Mother Nature is actually really clever. She designed erections. It's very clever, basically hydraulics. And the main veins that you need to think about for erections are actually kind of on the outside of the part of the penis that gets hard. And the harder you get, the more the arteries fill that penis up with blood, the more those veins on the outside kind of get squished down. So we're closing off the hole in the bucket that would let everything drain down the harder you get. It's pretty mm-hmm. clever. So you need good arteries and you need good veins to keep everything working. But no one ever remembers what's the third thing that every guy needs for a good erection. And this is a little bit of a trick question because no one thinks of it. But what you need is a really good, reliable mechanism to kill an erection when you don't need it anymore. So basically, think about it. When you're done with an erection, if you were to stay hard, guess what? The penis would be in pretty bad shape because the penis isn't meant to be hard all the time. It's got to relax a little bit in order to get the good oxygen, the good blood flow in. And the mechanism, the most powerful anti-erection mechanism known to mankind, believe it or not, is adrenaline. And it makes sense when you think about evolution. This is how I always explain it to guys. In evolution, you know, think of the fight or flight response. What is the last thing you need when you're trying to outrun a saber-toothed tiger? It's a good hard erection, right? You need that blood going elsewhere. So anything that can kind of stimulate that fight or flight is going to immediately start the adrenaline percolating. And it doesn't matter how willing you are. It doesn't matter how excited, how much you love your partner, how turned on you are. If that adrenaline is outweighing all the pro-erection, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All three sense. Of those have to be working well and working together day in and day out for guys to be able to get, maintain, and rely on erections throughout their life.
That was wonderful. Nice summary of ED and what's important to an erection. So let's take that information now. You know, you mentioned in your clinic, in your waiting room, you have late teenagers, you have you know, middle-aged men, and you even have a 90-year-old patient. So let's talk about each one of those groups a little bit, and how is ED different? So let's start with the younger guy. Let's say a guy in his 20s. Well, how is ED in a 20-year-old?
So when I see guys who are younger, there's a couple of factors that, you know, not to paint all guys with the same brush, because that's not fair, but typically in my practice here in D.C., guys in their 20s are usually not married. They're on the dating scene. You know, maybe they're in a monogamous relationship that's long term, but, you know, in general, the guy who's willing to come to me to make the phone call, that embarrassing, nerve-wracking phone call there where you have to tell a complete stranger you're worried about your erections, to see another complete stranger who is also a woman, by the way, you know, to get that, typically the guy who does that is the guy who is single and dating. And that's something that is, again, it's a little bit of a, I'm pointing fingers because I have plenty of married guys who've been married for a while, and it's not to say it's not as big of an issue, but typically it's less common in the 20s group.
Okay.
And when I talk to them, some things become very apparent. And this is where the adrenaline component of erections come into play. And this is a very, I'm going to make a statement that is inherently sexist, but to date, I've never been proven wrong. So I'm happy to be wrong if I am. But typically, when I'm talking to these younger guys, the statement is, a man is only as good as his last erection. And if I talk to him long enough, we can typically uncover a pattern where he'll say, you know what, I actually was on this date with this, I've met this really, really great chick on Tinder. We're fooling around. I don't know what happened. Ever since then, my erections are dead. Like, something's wrong. And and essentially, he's now developed a sort of pattern, you know, almost a Pavlovian response. He is so caught up in thinking about that time he didn't get hard enough, wasn't able to maintain, that he's oozing adrenaline. And actually, and I tell him, listen, there's nothing wrong with your penis. Your penis is doing exactly what you're telling it to do. Because at the end of the day, don't forget, every man walking around is literally just you're a balance between pro-erection and anti-erection components. You know, and the only difference between when you have an erection is you happen to have more pro-erection components, those molecules that get you hard and keep you hard. And when you don't have an erection, without even thinking about it, it's because, guess what? You have more anti-erection stuff going on.
So for the younger guy, often it's that anti-erection side is just too high, the adrenaline, he's setting himself up, and that's a common thing. Let's do move this now. Let me ask you something. You said something interesting. You had mentioned, you know, when a guy finally decides to call in and have that embarrassing conversation, it brought something to mind. How many guys have ED and have an issue here and they never call? Do you think it's a large number?
Oh, I think it's huge. The problem is I can't prove it to you because by nature of them never calling, I never know about them. So I can only go on the number of men who come into my clinic who tell me, you know what, I've had ED for 5 years and I've been too embarrassed to call. So I can only assume that there's guys who are out there who have had it, but for some reason they haven't reached the tipping point yet. Whatever it is, and some guys, and this is one of my favorite questions to ask is, well, what brings you here today? You've been married for 25 years, and you tell me that you and your wife haven't had penetrative sex for 8, but you weren't here 8 years ago, 7 years ago, 6 years ago. You're here today. How come?
Yeah.
And usually it's just a matter of, you know, they've resigned themselves or they've gotten the confidence from the fact that we're trying to destigmatize ED in society, that, you know, no one's embarrassed to say that they have diabetes because it's a disease and they shouldn't be. Well, it's the exact same thing with ED. It's a disease. There shouldn't be any embarrassment.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah, that's a good answer. And I think that's helpful. You know, I think more and more it is becoming less stigmatized. So I think that's a good thing. More guys will come out. So if you're listening and you got some ED issues, don't go ahead. Give George Washington University a call. What about the guy in the 50s?
So the guy in the 50s, now, you know, generalizing them, usually they're married or in a longer-term relationship, or at least have had enough long-term relationships under their belt by the time they get to be in their 50s that they don't sort of hang on to every date as a what's going to happen. You know, not like the 21-year-old who doesn't know what the Tinder date's going to what's going to unfold with that. He's the guy who very often he's married and there's something else going on. Prostate cancer being the big cause of why I see a lot of guys in my clinic who are that young.
Yeah.
Because 50s, you know, 50s is the new 40s. A guy in his 50s is a young man. And very often, they're extremely healthy. They don't have any of the other issues that we thought about, you know, 30 years ago. You know, their smoking is down for men in their 50s. They're if they were smokers, they've quit long ago. They're not overweight, diabetes, you know, all of those things. The one thing they can't control with their lifestyle, though, is prostate cancer. And I say prostate cancer partly because I'm biased as a urologist, so I see so much of it. But it also is one of the most important cancers where when we treat it, we can compromise erectile function. So the guy with prostate cancer that I see him, obviously there's only two points I can see him. I either see him before he's had prostate cancer in treatment or I see him after. And it's important because when we talk about, for example, prostate cancer surgery, it's a very different conversation because this is a guy where I have to say, listen, I know right now you have a great sex life. You're taking Viagra, a little dose of it just to give you a little boost, but you're doing great in the bedroom. You and the wife are very happy, but you're going to have your surgery next week. And I'm going to tell you, the surgery itself is going to take you out. It's going to put you on the bench for a little while. You're out of the game for a bit. So you have a guy who can go almost overnight from being very sexually active to no sexual activity whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that's a very difficult thing for guys to stomach for obvious reasons. And and the challenge is working with them to get them back to as much erectile function recovery as we can. But that's where it's a marathon and not a sprint. We can't have him. We just don't have the means to get him his erections back as quickly as we have the means of taking it away, unfortunately.
Right. What about in this age group as well, though? You're an overall healthy guy, but it, you know, definitely there's erectile dysfunction. Do you worry about overall arterial health, heart disease risk, does that come up as well?
I definitely do. So the artery question, when we know for a fact that when a guy has arterial dysfunction, and these are the actual penile arteries that we're talking about, when they have compromise of those arteries, almost all of those guys will at some point, if nothing changes and they don't make any lifestyle interventions, you know, cholesterol being a big one, almost all of them will develop cardiovascular disease at a later date. And that's why it's important. When I have a guy who walks in my office and he's 52 and he's healthy and I do the testing and I figure out that it's arterial insufficiency, he sees his primary care doctor or a cardiac doctor within the next month or two. Because he's going to have a heart attack, but because that is a hallmark predictor of later on. And it's incredibly helpful if we can keep these men healthier.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the guy in the 80s? You mentioned you have your oldest patient, I think you said it was 90?
What's going on there? Yeah, he's in his 90s. It's wonderful. These are guys, you know, once we get into our 70s, 80s, 90s, now you're talking about where you are health-wise as a culmination of usually a lot of different diseases. You know, now we've got, you know, 25 years of high sugar or high blood pressure. Maybe he's on some blood pressure meds that are certainly not helping the erections. Typically, over time, what we find with those guys is now, you know, adrenaline was when the guys are younger. It's arterial insufficiencies. Very often, not always, but often enough when guys are, you know, middle-aged. When they're elderly, a lot of the times we'll see the veins are the culprit. And the reason that it's helpful for me to figure out where they are, is it venous problem, arterial, or adrenaline, is because it can help me predict what's going to fix them most effectively. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of times when we get to the venous issues, then we're talking about, well, maybe we need to we know that the medications aren't very helpful. Maybe we need to talk surgery. We need to talk penile implant. Because typically, the guys with arterial insufficiency, they respond incredibly well to medications. I can get their arteries to dilate and pick up the slack, and they're happy as a clam. But the veins are a real bugaboo. Those are the ones where sometimes we have to go the extra step and talk surgery.
Yeah. Fascinating conversation, Dr. Childs. Let's end with this. What would you like the audience, the listening audience, to know about erectile dysfunction?
So erectile dysfunction is only one of many sexual dysfunctions that any guy can have. And we really have to remove the stigma of sexual dysfunction, because one of the things we don't do a great job about is helping guys understand that they're not alone. There are tons of different kinds of sexual dysfunction. There's premature ejaculation. There's curvature of the penis, Peyronie's disease, ED. All of these things are common for doctors to treat, and they're something that is treatable. So don't let embarrassment stop you from getting the help that you want.
Yeah. Great summary, Dr. Childs. I want to thank you for the work that you're doing, and thank you for coming on the show today. You're listening to GW Medical Faculty Associates Podcast. For more information, go to gwdocs.com. That's gwdocs.com. I'm Dr. Mike Smith. Thanks for listening.